Gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the ghost stories. Here's what's happening. Well, a story we just got, an explosive device was found at the Westchester, New York home of billionaire George Soros, the globalist. The Wall Street Journal, citing local law enforcement, reported that police received a phone call from the residence about a suspicious package. An employee that works at the home found the package, opened it, revealing what appeared to be some kind of explosive device. The employee then placed the package way out there in the wooded area until authorities had arrived. George Soros is 88 years old. He is a billionaire, and of course, he is a true globalist. The United States sent two warships through the Taiwan Strait in the second such operation this year as the U.S. military increases the frequency of transits through the strategic waterway despite opposition from China. The voyage risks further heightening tensions with China, but will likely be viewed in self-ruled Taiwan as a sign of support by President Donald Trump's government. Tensions with China, big time. As we've been reporting, a polio-like condition that has left children in 22 states paralyzed may be more widespread now than previously announced due to inadequate testing protocols and voluntary reporting requirements. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that there have been 62 confirmed cases of this so-called polio-like condition. Well, President Donald Trump tweeted that the United States will begin cutting off foreign aid to countries that have failed to stop the growing group of thousands of migrants marching its way through Mexico and to the United States border. They're about 1,000 miles away. There's 7,000 people 1,000 miles away. Mr. Trump blamed Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador for not being able to do the job or stopping people from leaving their country. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us. John, first of all, I got to ask you, I mean, these people aren't stopping. Why isn't Mexico doing something about it?
Well, George, they lack the resources to do anything. The other thing that people need to realize, and of course, this is an election year, we're only 2 weeks out from the midterms, is this is a great issue for Trump and the Republicans. His approval ratings have just been reported as really among the highest approval ratings since, you know, of his presidency. Now, these flows of immigrants have been going on for the last 30 years, George. This is nothing new. What's new about it is that this is a particularly large group, but what it really reflects is the total failed states in Central America, parts of South America, certainly in Mexico, where these countries have just widespread anarchy. They have gangs that essentially control the streets. That it's really, truly an intolerable situation for these people. They can't feed their families, and the only hope they have is to come at what they call El Norte, which is to go north into the United States, which has an economy that's capable of absorbing these people. Now, the truth is, okay, for all those, you know, people that are anti-immigrant and all this stuff, is that these folks that come across the border illegally are the backbone of the unskilled workforce in the United States in every economic sector that you can imagine. So you talk about hotels and hospitality and meatpacking and farming, and the list just goes on and on of industries that hire illegals, including, yes, the president, Donald Trump, hires illegals to really help with the maintenance of his properties and in the construction trade. So the idea, you know, that this has now become like a great political football for him is these flows of immigrants are not going to stop, and they reflect the failed states over there. There's not going to be any reduction in foreign aid coming from Trump. That's a great stump speech, but it's not going to happen. Congress is the one that allocates the money, and they're not going to cut the money to these governments because, George, what they know is that if you create more mass poverty over there, you're going to get even greater
flows
of immigrants coming to the United States. But the fact is that we need these people. essentially, to do the unskilled labor that nobody is willing to do because the industry is such in this country right now that there's no way that they can fill those positions with just the normal U.S. population.
So are you just saying let the 7,000 illegals just walk right into the United States?
Of course not. But what I'm saying is that when they pay the coyotes, you know, to bring them across through tunnels or whatever the break is in the fences that go on that thousands of miles of border, that's going to continue going on. And there's nothing in Washington that can stop it. There's no immigration reform package, any kind of bipartisan package that's going to stop the flow of illegal immigration. It's purely a function of failed states in Central America and the fact that we have an economy that supports this kind of a labor force, and it's going to continue to go on ad infinitum.
This is going to be a disaster, John. I just feel that something's going to happen here. 7,000 migrants about 1,000 miles away from the U.S. border. A San Francisco judge denied Monsanto's request to nix a $250 million award to a man who said he got terminal cancer from Roundup weed killer. But she's also slashing the man's punitive award down from the $250 million to about $39 million. Well, this is a bizarre story, but it's pretty darn serious. There are exploding toilets out there on the market, and they're being recalled. About 1.4 million FlushMate flushing systems sold at Home Depot are being recalled due to an exploding hazard. Just be careful if you bought these at Home Depot from September 96 through December of 2015. One of the world's biggest tobacco firms, Philip Morris, has been accused of staggering hypocrisy over its new ad campaign that urges smokers to quit. The Marlboro maker said the move was an important next step in its aim to ultimately stop selling cigarettes. But cancer research company said the firm was just trying to promote its smoking alternatives such as heated tobacco. An Ontario, Canada psychic has been charged with pretending to practice witchcraft by bilking upwards of 20 clients out of more than $100,000 in cash and jewelry, a score police say she achieved by telling highly vulnerable customers that she needed to cleanse their property of evil spirits in order to cure their ailments. Full moon coming up on October 24th. It's called the Hunter's Moon. It's going to look gorgeous. Stephen Cates, our astronomer with us, Dr. Sky. Hi, Stephen. What do you have for us this week?
Hello, George. So many exciting things in our October skies, but naturally we begin closer to home with space. How about this? The U.S. Air Force's OTV-5, or simply known as the X-37B spacecraft, has been in orbit now, George, for well over 400 days. It's not a record. But it was launched back last year in 2017 in September aboard a Falcon 9 rocket. It appears to be carrying out some secret reconnaissance programs and testing of secret electronic payloads from an orbit a lot lower than the space station, this one about 197 miles above the Earth. But this looks very much, George, like a small version of the space shuttle. A lot of space enthusiasts out there wonder if they can ever see it in the sky. Interesting also to note is Mission Control is located in Schreiber Air Force Base in Colorado. And you can actually spot this fast-moving object in the sky. We suggest our listeners go to drsky.com, check on the left side of our website, the satellite locator, punch in your location and the X-37. What makes this interesting, George, it moves much faster than normal spacecraft. Something's up with that. But in the live sky, as you alluded to before, just hours away from the beautiful full Hunter's Moon. This is called Lunation 1185, for those that want to know precision. This started with lunation numbers back in January of 1923, just keeping the moon honest and knowing what we're doing. But this is interesting, George, because if you take a look at the moon, obviously now in your sky, the live sky, it's about 239,000 miles away. But think of it the other way. If we were standing on the surface of the moon, this is exactly what the Earth would look like. Can you imagine this, George? The full Earth would be 15 times brighter than this magnificent full moon we're going to see, and four times larger. We can still see remnants of the Orionid meteor shower. How to do it? Look high in the south at 4 a.m. till sunrise, clear skies, of course, to the left of a brilliant star called Betelgeuse, the orange-red supergiant in Orion. Some meteors are still able to be seen. They're all from Halley's Comet. And George, in months to come, another exciting comet heading in toward the sun that should be easily visible in binoculars. So much more, ladies and gentlemen. Visit, of course, us at drsky.com and our aviation website, photorecon.net. Email me at drsky@cox.net. And, George, we saved the best for last. Always remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
I love it. Thank you, Stephen. Up next, Robert Zubrin back with us as we talk about all things space next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with our special guest for the next couple hours, Robert Zubrin from, of course, the Mars Society. Robert is also the president of Pioneer Astronautics and, of course, the Mars Society, as well as a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. Robert has studied and researched the fields of aerospace and energy. He's got a Ph.D. in nuclear engineering as well. Noted author, one of his books, How to Live on Mars. And we're going to talk about all things space in the next couple hours. Robert, welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for inviting me.
Always a pleasure. How have you been?
Pretty good. Keeping busy.
When are we going to Mars?
At this point, it looks like we're going to go to Mars when either SpaceX or one of us or one of its competitors takes us there. SpaceX is pushing hard, following up their success with the Falcon Heavy launch vehicle, with developing their BFR rocket, which will be a fully reusable two-stage to orbit, 150 tons to Earth orbit vehicle that's equivalent to a Saturn V, but fully reusable. That will give us the capability to go to Mars. And if they should, skate off the edge of the ice, because, you know, Elon Musk likes to skate next to the edge of the ice.
Yes, he does.
They got the Blue Origin company led by Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, is coming up on his heels. So we've got a new space race going on, and I think that one of these outfits is going to get us to Mars. Right now, you know, NASA does great work with its robotic planetary missions and its space astronomy missions. Their work in that field is epic, but the human spaceflight program is dysfunctional. They claim they want to go to the moon, but they're not even planning a reasonable plan to do that. And so I think it's going to be one of the new kids on the block that gets us there.
Are you happy that privatization is taking off the way it is and that NASA is kind of like fading away?
I'm happy that privatization is taking off. I am not happy that NASA's human spaceflight program is dysfunctional. I'm not happy about that at all. It would be a disaster if NASA's robotic spaceflight program and space astronomy programs became as dysfunctional as the human spaceflight program. But, I mean, it's really sad to see this program, I mean, that stormed heaven in the 1960s, doing this crazy stuff now where, you know, they say they want to go to the moon. And I was at a conference in Florida a month ago where a high-level NASA official actually got up in front of an aerospace audience and said, "We're not ready to land on the moon. We don't know how to land on the moon."
what happened in 1969?
Yeah, you got to – maybe they're waiting for all the people that can remember that to die off so they can tell people they did it the first time.
Well, and that statement alone, Robert, will make all the people who doubt that we went to the moon jump for joy and say, "See, I told you so."
Well, I got to tell you, guys like him didn't take us to the moon. I mean, here's this thing. You know, they're saying before we go to land on the moon, we need to build a space station in orbit around the moon, which is totally crazy. It's totally crazy. And and they want to put it in this weird orbit, which is going to be hard to get to and hard to get to the moon from it and hard to get back to it from the moon. It's going to add propulsion requirements. It's going to add timing requirements to any lunar mission. I mean, let me tell you what they call this, the Deep Space Gateway.
Yeah, okay.
And let me tell you what I call it, the lunar orbit toll booth, okay?
But
here's an analogy. Let me say I offered you the following deal. I want to rent you an office in Saskatoon. Now, you're going to have to pay to build the building, and you're going to have to pay $100,000 a month rent, and it's a 30-year lease. You can't get out of it. And you must go there and stay there at least 1 month a year. And if you want to fly anywhere from your home, you have to pass through Saskatoon to go there.
I'd pass on that deal. I'd pass on that deal.
That's the deal. And this thing is.
But I'd buy the swampland, you'd probably sell me.
What?
I'd buy the swampland, you'd probably want to sell me too.
You'd be a lot better off with the swampland than with this.
Jeez. Well, you know, with Bezos doing what he's doing, Falcon X, SpaceX, it's a good thing. You're right. It's just, you know, for someone like you and me, the way we grew up during the space program, watching NASA just kind of not do much anymore with manned space flights, it's disappointing, Robert. It really is.
Well, it is. And, I mean, look, you know, our parents' generation won World War II. They had a government that was functional. And that government built the interstate highway system, and that government got us to the moon. And now we see this thing as just dysfunctional. It's incredible. I mean, it's not all NASA. I mean, this is across the board. We've had a major deterioration in the quality of the political class in terms of its ability to execute great projects and act on the basis of public spirit instead of partisan chaos. And, you know, so there it is. But I got to tell you, you know, I was hoping that the new NASA administrator, who was delayed in getting into office for quite a while, would come in and say, I'm not buying this crazy lunar orbit space station. This is, you know, what the incompetents who preceded us, you know, wanted to do. I'm going to straighten this out. We can certainly land on the moon. I was hoping Bridenstine would do that, but he didn't. He just went along. And I'm just shocked, frankly.
A couple weeks ago when I was in Los Angeles, I had a chance to witness the flight of one of the Falcons at night, and then it came back. It was a reusable, and it was just gorgeous, Robert, watching that. And half the people who were looking into the skies that night, they didn't know what it was. They thought it was a UFO or something like that, but it was spectacular to watch. It's incredible technology, isn't it?
Well, it is, although, I mean, one might say it's about time. Because, sure, we started the space age with expendable rockets, and you'd figure that 50 years later we'd finally get them to be reusable. So better late than never, and here it is. And I got to tell you, this thing that Musk has done in creating these reusable rockets, and he's reduced the cost of space launch by a factor of five. It was $10,000 a kilogram before Musk. Now it's $2,000 a kilogram.
That's dramatic.
It's dramatic. It's spectacular, and it was done on a shoestring compared to what NASA considers normal for developing new space systems. I mean, it was done like for one-tenth the money and one-third the time that anyone was accepting would be normal. And this thing, the result has been not only these remarkable space systems that SpaceX is fielding. It is causing private money to get into space and a number of other advanced fields that people thought were hopeless. So, Bezos has his own money. He's got Blue Origin. But we now have three small launch companies, Firefly, Vector Space, Electron. These are small launch vehicle companies that have all gotten, you know, investments on the order of $70 million, $100 million to field small launch systems. And it even goes beyond the space industry. We now have fusion power startups getting funded because people, you know, they were looking at fusion power. Oh, this is just never going to happen. They keep on saying it's going to happen in 20 years, and now it's been 20 years, and they think it's another 20 years. But people then say, maybe it's not really an impossible technical problem. Maybe the problem here is interesting. And I got to tell you, I actually worked in the fusion program in the 1980s. And I can remember one lunch we had at Los Alamos when the group leader looked around the table and he said to all of us, you know, when fusion power is finally developed, it's not going to be at a place like Los Alamos or Livermore. It's going to be a crackpot working in his garage.
Yep.
Well, maybe not a crackpot in his garage, but I think probably a startup working in a warehouse is going to do it.
And he's going to get funded, and God knows what he's going to be able to do with it. Robert, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about space. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with you. Robert Zubrin, our special guest tonight, for a couple hours, next on Coast to Coast AM. March 23rd, circle it. Those of you who live on the West Coast, especially Everett, Washington, we up there. We're going to have our live stage show, and tickets are just going out the door like crazy, but you can get yours because we're months ahead. Take advantage of it. Don't wait too long, but go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. At the top of the homepage, click the events section. You'll see that up there. Or in the carousel reel, that's the revolving section where all those pictures change. Click the link to the Everett Theater, and you can get your tickets that way, and you'll really enjoy it. March 23rd, our live show in Everett, Washington. And welcome back with Robert Zubrin from the Mars Society as we talk about space. We'll take calls with Robert next hour. Robert, you know Elon Musk, don't you? What kind of a guy is he?
Well, what can I say? He's... an unusual guy.
Do you like him?
Yeah, although he can be difficult at times. I mean, he has a sense of humor. It's kind of dry. And he is... okay, look. The things to know about Elon is this. Okay, on the one side, he's very driven. He's very hardworking. And he is driven to want to do something great for the human future. He wants to be a person for the ages. He likes money. He likes cool things he can buy with money, but that's not what he's about. Now, he wants to go down in the history books for doing something great for humankind. And so that's the other side of it, okay, is that he doesn't just want to do great deeds. He wants eternal glory for doing great deeds. So he's not Mother Teresa. He can be selfish. He's certainly not above using people. And, you know, if you look at some of the things about him that didn't come off so well, like him getting angry that he couldn't be the one that rescued those kids in Thailand. That's the other side of it. So, there is a selfish side to it, but it's not selfish for money. It's selfish for eternal glory for doing great deeds.
Is it ego?
It's not exactly ego. It's if you read Greek mythology like the Iliad, this is what Homer's heroes are about. They are about eternal glory for doing great deeds. Or Shakespeare's Henry V, when he gives that speech, we few, we happy few, we band of brothers. He wouldn't want anyone else there with him at Agincourt to fight the French, because he even though it means the odds are more against him, he doesn't want to share the glory with anyone. So, that's Musk to a T. And that's the classical motive of a hero. Okay, so I think Musk is a hero, not a hero in the sense of being a perfect person, but a hero in the sense of being the kind of person that is depicted as a hero in literature, that is a person who wants to win eternal glory, a knight errant who goes out looking to slay dragons, looking to do something terrific. That's what he's about. But...
How would you compare him to Jeff Bezos, Robert?
Well, Jeff Bezos is much calmer, much more laid back.
Yeah.
I don't know Bezos. I've met him once, but that was certainly my impression. And if you look at how the two companies are run, they reflect that. Musk is extremely driven. He wants this done fast. He wants everything done yesterday, and the company takes chances, and thus far they're winning. But certainly they push very hard. Bezos, the motto of his company is step by step ferociously. He's not in a rush. Bezos' strength and his weakness is that he has unlimited funds. Now, why? You say, well, limited funds, that sounds like a strength, doesn't it? Well, in one sense, it obviously is. But in the other sense, it isn't, because if you have unlimited funds, you have unlimited time. And that's why, at this point, SpaceX is racing ahead of him. So this is SpaceX is the hare, Blue Origin's the tortoise. And it'll be very interesting to see who wins this race. You know, Bezos is at least 10 times as rich as Musk, okay? So, I mean, Musk, you know, by the standards of you and me and almost anybody, is a very rich person. He's the 94th richest person in the world, according to Forbes.
And is he doing all this with his own money, or is he getting financing? What's he doing?
No. Musk he started out doing it with his own money. Right now, it's partially his own money, but he's also won a lot of contracts for launching things for NASA, for the military. Bezos is doing it all with his own money, okay? Bezos, you know, is the richest man in the world. And he says, I can just take $1 billion worth of Amazon stock each year, sell it off. I got $1 billion. I'll spend it on Blue Origin. So he has unlimited funds, and he thinks he has unlimited time. Musk knows that, in aerospace, cost is people times time. The quicker you do something, the cheaper it costs. People say things like, oh, if we tried to do Mars, you know, within 10 years, it would cost much more. No, it would cost much less because a space program is like riding in a taxi cab, and it costs you whether it's standing still or whether it's moving.
Yeah, that is true. Let's talk about our mutual favorite subject, and that's Mars. What's going on with some of these latest discoveries, underground lakes and things like that, Robert?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's pretty spectacular, okay? The European, but all these experiments, discoveries, by the way, are being made now with something that's not exactly new, but is finally really showing its stuff, which is a ground penetrating radar. That is radar that can look through the ground and see what's underground. And the ground penetrating radar on the European Mars Express probe found an underground lake on Mars. It's salt water, but it's definitely, from the point of view of microbial life, a habitable environment. It's been suspected by a lot of scientists and by me that there was liquid water underground on Mars. It has now been found, and I believe that we're going to find a lot more, because there's no reason why this lake would just exist in one place. I think there's an underground water table on Mars. On Earth, some of the earliest organisms that ever lived on Earth are still living deep underground in the groundwater. The surface of the Earth has changed radically. It's no longer habitable for them, but the groundwater is as it was billions of years ago, and they've been down there. And if there was ever life on the surface of Mars, it would have retreated into that groundwater and it'd be there still. Now, then beyond that, the ground-penetrating radar on the American Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter has found glaciers on Mars.
Wow.
At mid-latitudes. That is mountains of pure water ice, and something like 1 million cubic kilometers of pure ice covered by just a few feet of dust. Now, it's right there, and it's at mid-latitudes. That is, it's as far south as 38 north in the northern hemisphere of Mars, which, by the way, is the same latitude as San Francisco. So imagine that there were glaciers in San Francisco and Denver and, Washington, D.C. You know, that's the latitude that these things are. And what it means is that there's water readily available on Mars, and not just, half a kilometer or a kilometer underground like this lake is, but right at the surface where you could get at it with a shovel.
That's exciting. Now, some people, this is strange. Some people say that if there's life on Mars or even the possibility, that we shouldn't even go there. That's weird. Why?
Well, that's a pretty crazy point of view.
I think so, too.
There's two different versions of it. One is the scientists saying, if you go to Mars, then if we find life there, we won't know whether we brought it or not. Okay?
Contamination?
So, yeah, well, that's like saying if you go to France, you won't know if the people there are French or not. I mean, because they might have all gotten off the plane with you. I mean, look, if how do we know that there's actually people in France and they didn't all just show up when you did? Well, for one thing, there are houses and there's the Arc de Triomphe and there's the Eiffel Tower. There's all this stuff that they built in the past. Well, if there's life on Mars today, it was there in the past, and there will be fossils of it. And, I mean, to say that fossils of life on Mars don't prove that the life you find there was there before is like the people who say that dinosaur bones don't prove that there were dinosaurs because God could have put the dinosaur bones in the ground and the world could have been made in 7 days and there never was a geologic past. It's all been a trick by tricky gods. I mean, it's just absurd. So if you believe that, the fossil record on Earth proves the existence of life on Earth in the past, and therefore that the life on Earth in the present actually did evolve here, then you have to believe that if we find life on Mars and we also find fossils, that life is native. Now, on the other hand, if we find life on Mars and we don't find any evidence that it was there in the past, then yes, there's a good chance that you brought it. But, you know, that's like going to a foreign country and finding no buildings there, just a couple of other people wandering around. And you said, hey, did you just get off this plane? And if they say, no, we've been here forever, and you say, well, where's your houses? They say, well, I don't know. Then you might suspect that they're pulling one on you, and they also they arrived the same time you did. But you see what I'm saying? So this scientific argument against going to Mars is absurd, and this idea that we'll know more about Mars by not going is just crazy. Because I mean, what planet do we know the most about?
Whatever happened to the plans? Your plans to terraform Mars and to try to develop an atmosphere?
Well. Terraforming Mars is something that is going to have to be done in the future. It's not something that, frankly, our generation is going to do.
It could take 50 or 100 years to complete?
No, it'll take longer than that, although basically here's how it goes. First, in our time, we can send human explorers to Mars. We can set up the first bases on Mars. And I'm hoping to be alive when the first child is born on Mars, okay? That's what I'd like to see. The first...
What a birth certificate that would be.
Yeah, there you go, right? Okay, so the first child born on Mars, that is when we're really there, okay? But after that, we're going to have to grow, settlements, towns, cities on Mars, create industries on Mars. Once that is done, which might be 100 years from now, once you have a strong industrial civilization on Mars, they can actually address the question of trying to change the climate of Mars and change the environment. Because first thing you got to do with Mars is you want to warm it up. And we know how to warm planets up.
Mm-hmm.
We're proving that right now on Earth. And if we wanted to do it on purpose, we could do it a lot more effectively. And the way to do it is to produce greenhouse gases, that trap the sun's heat. CO2, of course, is a greenhouse gas, but we know how to make gases that are much more powerful greenhouse gases than CO2. And if we produce them on Mars, and these are called... fluorocarbon gases. We sometimes manufacture them on Earth for use in refrigerators and air conditioners. But we didn't put them in such machines. Instead, we just released them into the atmosphere, and we were producing them at the same rate we're producing them on Earth right now. in 50 years, we'd warm Mars by 10 centigrade. That's a lot, okay? That's an awful lot. That's 10 times as much as anybody is talking about global warming happening on Earth. And and if you warmed Mars that much, that warming itself would force carbon dioxide to come out of the soil because it's been sponged in. It would outgas. And it would thicken the atmosphere a lot with CO2, which is a greenhouse gas, and that would warm the planet even more. So much so that the frozen water, those glaciers that we're talking about, they'd start to melt. They'd start to flow. And there's as much fresh water in those glaciers as there is in North America.
Wow, ocean's full, I bet.
Well, planet-wide there is in those particular glaciers probably as much as the American Great Lakes. But yes, the waters on Mars that's frozen in all kinds of places would start to melt. The dry rivers on Mars would start to flow. The lakes and seas would start to fill up, and there'd also be rain. And once you have that kind of planet with a thick CO2 atmosphere, liquid water, rain, then you can start spreading plants around. Now, if we were using the kind of plants we have on Earth now, which are only about 1% efficient in capturing sunlight and doing photosynthesis, it would take 1,000 years for them to make enough oxygen for Mars to be breathable. But if we're talking 100 years from now, it's really not too far out to assume that we can do genetic engineering of plants to make them, instead of 1% efficient, 5% efficient, and in which case this thing could happen much, much faster. And I think Mars is going to be terraformed within 200 years, and my guess is it'll probably be done by ways that are more efficient than what I just described to you, because they're going to be doing this with technologies we don't know about.
And who's going to do it, though, Robert? What country?
The Martians.
Ah, they're going to do it themselves. Now, when we talk about competition, I don't see Russia as really pushing its space program much. I mean, they launch us to the ISS and they bring us back. We almost had a tragedy a few weeks ago with a couple, a cosmonaut and an astronaut that had to abort. But I see China and India as coming along strong. How about you?
Well, here's the thing. The revolution in space flight is really going to put the question to these people. I think India is going to rise to the challenge, but now China and Russia are going to both face a real question, which is, are they going to allow private space launch companies? My guess, the Chinese will, because they've seen the benefit of privatization in terms of their very rapid progress since they moved away from command economy. But Russia, the issue there is not allowing private space launch companies, but allowing space launch companies to believe that if they got started, they wouldn't get stolen by the government. Because, you know, the Russian government is basically organized crime. I mean, you know, Russia is not a country with an organized crime problem. It's an organized crime family with a country.
Yeah.
And so if they are going to have their own SpaceXs, and they're going to need to have them if they're going to be competitive. That's the thing.
Hold on, Robert. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this, and we'll open up the phone lines with Robert Zubrin next on Coast to Coast AM.